Suns fans, you know what time it is in the PHX.
Empire of the Suns.
Phoenix Suns.
The Empire of the Suns podcast is brought to you by Sonic. Sonic.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there, and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman. Well, Kevin, I'm moving light fixtures around my hotel room. I've got a nice scenic view behind me. It must be the postseason, baby. How's it going?
Do they have a golden hour there in Minnesota, Minneapolis? I don't know. We might see some sunset. I can't tell what's going on, but the colors have changed behind you, I think.
That might just be the terrible hotel Wi-Fi that could cause me to sound like a robot at any point in this podcast. We apologize. We're doing our best under the circumstances that have been dealt to us. The circumstances that were dealt to the Phoenix Suns after game one was a 120-95 loss. I think that this game can get characterized as sort of a beatdown and sort of a blowout in a game that wasn't really all that close. We'll get really into the details of it, but where I want to start, Kevin, is I am the person who did not pick the Suns to win this series, and apparently that's a thing. I didn't really expect to be like alone on that camp, but I've seen the majority of like national and local people picking the Suns to win this series. And I'm saying this because I'm right. No, I'm saying this because I went away from that game, left that game, walking back to my hotel from that game, and I'm like, Suns are fine. Like there's nothing from... There are little things that concern me in that game. It was a one-game sample size of stuff. But overall, I just thought Minnesota was really, really good and looked like the Minnesota Timberwolves for the first time against the Phoenix Suns this year. But let me know what you thought, because you were one of the people, many who picked the Suns. You were the one who was more optimistic about this matchup than me. What's your concern meter at after this one? Because I think we always do that after game one. We try and not read into too much, but read into a little bit. How much are you reading into from this?
I said this when I picked the Suns to win in seven, I believe, that I could watch one game and decide that was a terrible choice. And I think I'm already there to some degree. And the degree is I did not like how they responded to things. I did not like how uncrisp their offense looked, even though like you look at the numbers and it wasn't terrible. Even if you say, okay, they make the layups that they missed, like that's a 15-point loss maybe, then not a 25-point loss. But when you look at the Suns losing every single little thing around the margins, whether it's second chance points, rebounding, obviously that's because of missed shots, but also because of offensive rebounds. If you looked at the low assist numbers, you looked at the free throw line, like they were actually drawing fouls, but they just weren't shooting fouls. They lost the 3-point line. They lost the bench terribly. It's hard to find optimism, even if I give them 10 points back for missing layups, is what I'm going to say there. And to your point, though, I will say, like, this is the Phoenix Suns team. I shouldn't have expected them to suddenly change and turn into a new gear, but like they're going to be inconsistent is what I'm getting at. And that's not good news when you're playing a team that looks by all accounts to be very real and all the things from the regular season carried over so far. I think, yeah, if you get Book and Beal more involved, this changes to maybe that's another 10 points to make up and then you're in a tough series. But I just didn't think the Suns reacted well to the physicality. I don't think the Suns got their game plan in at all. Just the spacing was terrible because their shooters, like, credit to Minnesota for not letting Grayson Allen and Eric Gordon and those guys tee off. Credit Nikhil Alexander-Walker for just having an awesome game. There's just too many things that went wrong against the Suns, so I don't know. I think it's going to be really tough to win. I don't think they're going to get swept by any means, but I kind of do regret picking them. That was a long answer. Sorry.
Oh, no, that's not good. Don't love hearing that, bud. One stat that I just looked up, and sometimes what happens is I'm going through the twister tornado of this turn and burn, getting the recap in, doing the podcast with you, that I missed something, and I'm going to add it when we're done here. 16 assists. That ties their season low from the regular season. They only had below like 20 assists like five or six times. And this was one of those games in the playoffs. And that is a nod to what this game was, if that makes sense. The Timberwolves, as expected, changed some things defensively, Kevin. They put Karl-Anthony Towns on Kevin Durant. They put Anthony Edwards on Bradley Beal. And I think the intention there was, we are going to sacrifice KD's ability to shred us in one-on-one coverage. And what we're going to do instead is not let the gears get spinning. We're fine with this tempo. We're fine if KD gets 30 or 40. I think that when I watch the game back again, I'm going to look at opportunities they had to get Durant the ball, because this felt like a night he should have taken like 30 shots and he took 17. That's where he likes to be. We've talked about that a lot on the podcast. But what I saw was, we're putting an on Beal. We're not going to let him get to the basket that much. We're going to do all these things to Booker. We are going to let you go at Durant. We're not going to throw doubles. Like, when you see Cat on Durant, you're thinking like insta doubles on the pass, right? Not what they were doing. And it was very successful in what they did. They brought some zone into the game, both when the Suns went small and when they didn't. And a few of my points here, what I'm trying to say is, Minnesota just adjusted really well, and the Suns did not adjust to that. And the standout quote for me from the post game, I wasn't even there for this one, but it was Rudy Gobert who said, "Our focus and urgency was obviously at an all-time high. I love how we respected the game plan all 48 minutes from the first to the last. We tried to not let them get a hot start like they did the three other games and just do what we do." And we've talked about the full 48 this whole time, this whole season. It hasn't been there. And for Minnesota, it was clear how focused they were and how locked in they were. And Rudy, in his quote, kind of right there, hammered it home. This was not a game, Kevin, that was out of reach for the Suns for most of it. The score would indicate they got blitzed early and they kind of like tried to recover and didn't. If you're just reading it in that kind of way, that's not what happened. They were down 10 at halftime. This was despite Minnesota being up 16-2 on second chance points. So if you just take away a couple of those offensive rebounds, you're looking at like a 3-4-5 point game. And Phoenix's offense was bad. They were fouling a lot in the second quarter, which slowed the pace down. And that is not what they want. That is what Minnesota wants. And a concerning part of that, and the little layers I'm talking about, Book said it after, and I agreed with him, like, Minnesota was better in transition as well. And if Minnesota is the better transition team in this series, then it's a wrap. Like, the Suns have to be the better team off misses, semi-transition, even off makes. Like, the team pushing the pace better, their choices, their opportunities that they're taking there, when they're deciding to do that, who's getting the most out of it. If it's Minnesota, the Suns are screwed. But this was a 10-point game at halftime, and then the Suns came out. There was a miss. Grayson sprints the ball up, finds Brad on the wing, three. Miss. Kevin Durant jogs it up, crossover, midi. And then Brad hits a pull-up as well, and they're within four. It's like, here we go. They're finding the pace that they need to get, and they're getting stops as well, and they're rebounding the ball. And then Minnesota went nuts, particularly Anthony Edwards went nuts. And he had six turnovers, but what Minnesota will take is six assists. And I'm going to look, but I'm off the top of my head, four of those were to three-point shooters, and I think maybe all six were setting up threes. And those shooters were not hitting shots before in these three regular season games. They did now. Nikhil Alexander-Walker was really good in this series. He's been a really good player for them all year, and I think some Suns fans might be starting to get more familiar with guys like him. We've talked about Naz Reid at nauseam. Apparently, by the way, to be the reporter on the ground, he's like the Bobby Portis of this fan base. They love him. They're like chanting for him the whole game. They love some Naz Reid. He was very good. And there was just a collective effort there, Kevin, where if you want to be like basic about it, Kevin Durant was pretty darn good, but no one else on the Suns performed that well. And Minnesota had like six guys play well. Like, Mike Conley was not good in this game offensively, but that was about it. Everyone else on their team was playing really well.
You mean to say ad nauseum with the Naz Reid? Was that on purpose, by the way?
No, you know how I am at this time of year. Everything okay. Is accidental.
Okay. Anyway, I think my one of the worst plays that I saw from the Suns, to your point about the transition and lack of pace, was KD got a rebound. I don't remember. It was in the third or fourth quarter. There was an obvious kick ahead pass. He just stared at it, didn't make it, and then they went up no pace. That kind of felt like that to me, and I didn't realize the assist total was that low, but it definitely felt like that. And it's almost like they got baited into going after mismatches. And I know KD after the game was like, we love hunting mismatches. That is part of our game, to your question, to him. But like, you're playing into their hands. You're not getting everyone else in a rhythm. And again, it was spacing. It was more than that. But I think it was good. The Suns kind of got away from the high post, throw it to KD, and let him work out of that to some degree. I understand you have to do it sometimes in really gritty games. But it was almost like from the beginning, they were playing into that grittiness. And the pace was attached to that, I think. One thing that stood out to me too, and I'll ask you what you thought of it, but Book did not have a good game. What, 5 for 16? He went like from that really tough reverse where he basically almost turned it over to getting Rudy and drove baseline on Rudy. He didn't score until the fourth quarter, I believe, as far as field goals. I rewatched all of his attempts. Jaden McDaniels, and I thought they'd put Ant on him more, but it was mostly Jaden McDaniels, and he did a really good job. So if you say Ant's on Beal, KD's kind of, you know, only taking 17 shots, and McDaniels is doing that good on Book, then the Suns are in trouble. So Bick wrote this for our site, like, basically this takes away the regular season success of the Suns, any confidence they have. It kind of resets everything. Not that they should be down, obviously, but I think it really kind of showed like their adjustments got the Suns. And so obviously it's going to be on Phoenix to kind of dig out of that quickly here for game two. And I want to ask you, going back to what I was talking about Book, like, did you see more opportunities from him? Was it just good defense? I mean, people are going to kill him, but I don't know if it was necessarily him playing badly. But I will say the foul trouble and that kind of how he was complaining about not getting foul calls, and then the fouls he picked up were not smart, and that kind of looked like he was mentally not exactly where he should be to me.
He didn't play well, and I think I've discussed Booker as a tempo slash rhythm player for like the entirety of his career on this podcast. And it is a rare sight to see him out of the loop, off kilter. And that's what this game was for him. Didn't feel like he was getting the ball enough, but then when he did get the ball, he just wasn't making things happen. And in the first half, it turned into a game where it was like, okay, can the Suns just hit enough tough shots to make this close, and then we'll see what happens. But Booker wasn't hitting those tough shots. Durant was. But offensively, oftentimes, the two guys that are the barometers are Grayson and Book. And Grayson was hardly involved in the first half, which just meant the ball wasn't moving. Like, people are replying to me, like, flaming Grayson, saying he's playing, like, terrible. It's often not him. It's often the way that the team is moving the ball is going to dictate, one, how many catch and shoot threes he gets, but also like the closeouts. It's like when he, when they went to that zone at the end of the first half, after the Suns went small, the Timberwolves played that zone. Grayson, off an offensive rebound, like, had Gobert closing out on him and then attacked it and drew a foul. And it's like, yes, like when they move the ball and have space, like, he's going to benefit. He sprained his ankle in this game and did not return. And the Suns can't afford to lose anyone in their rotation right now. They cannot. Of those top six guys, at least, I'll say it that way. Especially in this series for Grayson, though, because this is not an Eric Gordon series. He tried to drive by Mike Conley like four or five times and just couldn't get by him. That was an issue. Gordon didn't shoot the ball well either, because I think he was looking for more space and more opportunities when it wasn't necessarily there. And then defensively, Minnesota doesn't really, I guess Monte Morris is the guy, but there's no one else on Minnesota's perimeter that you're okay with Gordon guarding. And that becomes an issue as well. So Suns got to hope that Grayson is okay. They have an extra day here, so we'll see. But I mean, we know how ankle sprains are. Like, it's going to affect him no matter what, even if he's playing on Tuesday. And he's still, to me, from the eye test, even if he played better in the last two regular season games, I think he still looks like he's being bothered by that hip injury. That's what I thought it was at first. But maybe that's still bothering him. He missed, I think, either the third or fourth to last game of the season for that hip flaring up from like 4 years ago. And then he came back and played pretty well. What else? I mean, the threes weren't, you were looking at the 3-point line and Timberwolves only took four more. The free throw line, it was fairly even. Turnovers, Kevin, I mean, they won points off turnovers. So I think any game where they won points off turnovers, I would say the Suns had to win that game, but we're one game in and I think it's okay. I can't remember how much we talked about him at all during when we were talking about third quarter. Anthony Edwards was incredible in this game. He's been a playoff performer for 11 games and now 12 games where he's just been great. And what happened was he was driving and just getting stripped again, Kevin. But the difference in this game, the key difference is that he had a couple, like two or three one-on-one situations where he could attack a one-on-one defender and he made the shot. And that seemed to give him at least a little bit of like bounce. And then once he got one or two of those situations in the third quarter, I think the way that Beal put it, it's like he hit two shots and then he just went nuts. And it's like, yeah, we can't just let a guy go nuts after he hits two shots. Cause then if he goes nuts, it's a superstar going nuts and we're done. And he was drawn with KD. KD seemed to be enthused about that in terms of just the competitive nature of those conversations. We know Anthony Edwards will talk on the floor, just like Devin Booker, but he was awesome. Carl Anthony Towns, Kevin, he was really good too. And that was, we didn't know because it's the meniscus and the key for Cat in this series is going to be aggressive downhill basketball when he has it because of the matchups he's going to have and because of the driving opportunities he'll have. He'll have off of Ant's extra pressure, the extra pressure that Ant draws. He was really good. I thought Gobert was really good in this game. And I think I said it earlier, but to that point on Booker, there is no universe where the Suns can win. I don't care what else happens in the game. If they don't have two of the four best players in any of these games, they're done. And I think Kevin's up there with like right after Ant in terms of the guys you want to name. And then Ant was there. Like I mentioned, Kat was there. Gobert was there. I'd put Nikhil Alexander-Walker fifth. Maybe that's when I put Brad like sixth. And that is an issue. That cannot happen because the whole reason they're supposed to win this series is because they have the two best players in the series. But Book's got to show up, and they need more from the supporting cast beyond Durant and Booker, especially on nights like this. And like they weren't hitting threes, they weren't getting ball moving. And guess what? By design, Minnesota knows what they're doing.
Do you expect big changes? There are a couple ways we could talk about that. How to defend Ant Edwards. I don't know if there's anything specific. Like I talked about in our preview episode, maybe you send more blitzes, get him off the ball before he even has a chance to attack anything, off pick and rolls and that sort of thing. Send doubles at him. I don't know if you necessarily need to do that or want to do that on this team that's shooting threes.
How much were they blitzing to your eye? Because I was on the floor, so it's hard for me to tell. There was one time he like split Nurk, but I couldn't tell how deep Nurk was.
They're not aggressively. I'd have to go back and look at leveling off of him and kind of coming up, but they're not like not letting him turn the corner. Basically, like he attacked that split
because they were.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were coming at the level like all three games. When I watched him back, they were not exclusively at the level, but they were coming up. So that's interesting that they didn't go to that yet.
Yeah, so I don't know if there's much to do against him. I think it's just be physical and you hope he misses a little more than he did. Like you said, I think it was just his confidence. Just you can see it growing when he hit that it was like an elbow turnaround over Beal, maybe, that was well defended. And then he just started stepping back from three after that. Nurk, he got a little action early and then he kind of disappeared and it looked like, oh, they're just going to let him attack and roll and not worry about him. And then they solved that really quick. So that was good for the T-Wolves' perspective. I don't think the Suns will do any rotation changes or throw Bol Bol in there or anything, but I don't know. That might be some spark initiation after if they lose game two or something, but I don't think they're going to make any big changes like that. They just need to get those shooters. But if Grayson's out, then everything's kind of open game, I think.
Yeah, if from a spacing element, I didn't even think about it like that. From a spacing element, they'd be in really, really a dangerous position. I think if Grayson doesn't play, it's probably Okogie just to get someone else on Ant.
Yeah.
Josh hit a couple of threes in this matchup back in November. Plays well with the matchup specifically, so we'll see. But I don't know. My two most concerning numbers, I mentioned this in the recap. One were the sticks assists for Ant. I mentioned that, but if he's able to set up shooters, if you don't know, Minnesota number one in the league in three-point percentage, excluding garbage time. Everyone on their team is a good shooter outside of Jaden McDaniels, Kyle Anderson, and Rudy Gobert. So Alexander Walker hitting four threes, like, yes, that will happen. That's not like, he won't have four threes a game. He might if you just keep leaving him open and he gets those shots up. The other concerning number, and this goes back to Booker specifically, but Gobert was plus 19 in this game. He was a combined minus 68 in the three Phoenix games this season, and a lot of that was because Booker was just on him. The November matchup specifically, I went back and clipped because Gobert was, Booker was like plus zero in the game, but he was plus 17 when he was out there against Gobert. He just has really worked Gobert well the last couple of years. And when Book's not playing well, that allows Gobert, I think, to really get in there, because then the rim pressure and getting by Gobert is on Beal. He's got Ant on him, who's a really good defender. And like you said, McDaniels was doing a really good job on Book, but both those guys, I can't say that like it's an excuse for Beal or an excuse for Booker. It's like they just have to be better. They have to score over these guys who can make all defense teams. Like McDaniel's going to be first team. Nikhil Alexander Walker was under consideration. I mentioned that earlier. Like he would have been like getting some shout in terms of like the lower usage guys, the guys non-starters who deserve shouts. But not really a concerning number, but just like a testament to how this game went for them. Mike Conley was like 2-for-12. Like he had sort of a stinker. And you didn't even realize it or recognize it at all because the other guys stepped up so much. I said Naz Reid played well. He was impactful. I don't think this was like a standout game from him. He had 12 points, but it was just that bench mob, him and Nikhil Alexander Walker, particularly. Alexander Walker was plus 28. And that is fitting for sure. Is it time for them to already go to Thad? What'd you think? Cause I think they need Eubanks for this series with the aggressive like hedging or at the level blitz, whatever they decide to do with Ant. Eubanks was doing it and he was doing a pretty good job in the Minnesota games. And then they need the rebounding. Even if Eubanks hasn't been that good of a rebounder this series, especially with how the offensive glass went. But then again, there was one offensive rebound where Gobert got it and Brad immediately got pissed at Drew. And it was like, here's the latest episode of a teammate getting frustrated at him on the floor. Time to go to Thad. Any other changes? What do you think?
I think it might be worth the floor spacing again, especially if Grayson's is out. And I know Thad isn't like he's a very low volume shooter, but he can space. But I thought it was interesting. Nurk popped one out early from the left wing. They need to space better. Again, if Grayson's out, that's a problem. And then you insert Royce. Eric Gordon has got to get up shots. And then where do you get it? And that's where Bol Bol, I'm thinking, okay, he can at least play to length, help on the boards a little bit, stretch and make you at least think about chasing him off the line. But yeah, that was the biggest thing in this game is if you're going to get, and you know you're going to get a physical team, you might get killed on the boards every single game in the series. That's their game. That's their team and how it's built. But the biggest concern, I think, when I get down to it is we talked about finding an identity with the Suns team. You wrote about it. It's spacing. It was not good. Minnesota did a really good job running people off the line, not letting people get shots. Like if Bradley Beal plays 37 minutes and doesn't get more than 10 shots, like something's wrong, especially when you're not playing the bench guys. So there's some offensive fixes where they need to make changes. And if that's Thad Young, it's a possibility, but I think it would come in the bigs, especially again, if Grayson's out. Anything else?
Anything else, bud?
Oh,
yeah. I don't really have much else. I just think that, I don't know if we described it this way at the start of the episode, but basically Minnesota, I tweeted this. I thought that this was the first like series I've covered where like the first 5 minutes could be huge. Cause I thought if Phoenix just did the same thing again, like they're ahead 24-11, Minnesota's going to be like, oh my God, can we just not beat these guys? Like what's happening? Oh, the one part I should mention, I wrote this. For Suns fans feeling down, especially, this was a giant day for Minnesota. It's not that this compares to 2021, like this game compares to 2021, but this is their best team in nearly two decades. In 2005, they made the Western Conference Finals with Kevin Garnett. Then they missed the playoffs for 13 straight years. They got back three times, but they lost in the first round. There was the Jimmy Buckets team, and then there were the two recent ones. Last year, Jaden McDaniels, remember that? Him punching a wall, Kyle Anderson shoving Rudy Gobert. It's like hard to like feel that. I think that was one of the main reasons why I was so down on them this year. I think in my Western Conference preview, I was like, I love this team, but it seems like they're falling apart.
Yeah.
They were without Jaden McDaniels and Naz Reid. So it was like they won 42 games. It wasn't really coming together just yet. This is the best team they've had in nearly 20 years, and they haven't seen hardly any success in nearly two decades. Like they're Timberwolves fans who were 11 when KG went up, and now they're in their 30s, and this is the best team they've seen since then. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this was a huge, huge night, day for them, and the fan base responded. They had a whiteout. They were really loud. It was a really good atmosphere. Just saying, like, this is like, I expected this to some extent. I did not expect the Suns to come out and just again blow them out in the first quarter, and then for it to go, I thought it was going to be more of a playoff vibe. I will say, eye test wise, being there, I thought the Suns handled the physicality pretty well, and they dished it out in their own right. But it was just in the second quarter, to your point, of like mental mistakes and like focus. It's like, okay, guys, you're being physical, but like there's limitations to the physicality. Like you have to do it in this, like you have to find that little niche. It was difficult to figure out where it was. It was like, okay, like the handsy fouls, you guys are not calling that, but then Booker did this to Ant, and then it was a foul. They just let every bump go. Like if you were just like trying to drive a shoulder into a guy and then like laying it in, you were never getting that call ever. It was applied to both sides as well. So it wasn't just like a Suns problem or anything. So the Suns' ability to like locate where the whistle was would be better for them. I think they were fortunate to get to their free throw attempts where they were, which was mid-20s, because there were hardly any free throws in the first quarter, and then whatever happened, they kind of found out and went from there. LeBron just hitting 30 footers in Denver right now, man. They're pushing the Nuggets right now in the first half, at least.
Interesting.
LeBron loves to look at the commentators after he does stuff. He looked at whoever that was. He was looking at he winked at Kevin Harlan the other night too. He's a funny guy. Oh, one more note. 11 of 25 from the rim. I don't know if that was because of Gobert or not. I'm going to go back and watch all 25 of those when I rewatch the game. What'd you think? Kind of, sort of both?
He was like there, but it wasn't like blocking shots. And it was weird because it was, I think, literally everyone missed at least a layup. Like I'm trying to think of someone who did not, who I can think of took a shot. Like Book missed one, that lefty, KD missed that alley-oop lob, which I don't even know that was in transition. It's like I don't know. I don't know if Beal missed one. Nurk definitely missed some that he does that a lot, but it's also like you're 2 feet from the rim, dude. And he missed another and one. So yeah, there was a lot of it. And I don't know. That might be an intimidation factor, but or just bad luck, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, I don't know. People always get mad about missed layups. It's like, I don't know.
They do get mad about that, but yeah, I think the panic from us, I think when we talked in to close out the podcast here in 2022, I always reference this because game three in New Orleans, I think in the first two games, you and I were like, let's kind of see. Like, it's been two games. Give them a second. Then after game three, you and I, and especially you, were like, I don't know, man. It's just not the team we watched. I don't know what's going on with them. And to that point, I think after game two, if we see a similar result in game two where the Timberwolves are just beating them up and they can't figure out how to get their offense moving, I think that's when you and I will both be like, uh-oh. Like, they're in real trouble here. But one game. It's just one game, and was just, it was very just one gamey. I'll put it that way. The Suns are going to, it's going to be, and to my point on picking against them because of their lack of consistency and not trusting how they've looked and their body language and whatever else you want to call it. If they respond poorly on Tuesday, that'll be like, that'll be my uh-oh. But if they respond okay, play to the level at least they did today from a physicality, effort, execution standpoint, and then they make tweaks, they realize what they did wrong and go back, then we're going to have a real series on our hands. But if we don't see that, that's when I'll start to be like, oh, are we done here in like five? Like, am I even going to, when I fly back to Phoenix after game five, is there even going to be a game six? That's when I'm going to start to get worried.
Yeah, cliche about winning on the road and or whatever. I hate those cliches, by the way. It's like, you should win the first game you have. You should also win the second game. I don't know.
Series doesn't start until a team loses at home.
Yes, okay, that one. Don't care.
Yeah, yeah, I guess the Dallas series didn't start until they were down 40 at halftime. Like, at home in game six. Yeah, I don't know. All right. Everyone, I hope you're hanging. I think about the Suns fans' mental state at this point, and I hope they're hanging in there, because it was a 25-point loss. I hope they're not taking it too hard. Like we try not to over panic here or over criticize until it's warranted, and that was not like a. I'm not coming out of my break at 6:15 yelling about Devin Booker right now. It's like he had a bad game. Jade McDaniels was great on him, and let's just see how he responds in game two.
What a reasoned, measured guy you are. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to go see baseball tomorrow, which might be a less reasoned approach because it's really cold here. It was like 35 degrees when I walked over, which I'll take over 110. I say that now, but maybe if I spent like 3 months at 35 degrees, I would feel differently. But it's supposed to get a little warmer tomorrow. I don't think they're practicing. So if you're listening, be on the lookout for a preview like Monday evening, Monday late afternoon, somewhere around there is when they'll be practicing, and we'll get more into the X's and O's and the zone and all that kind of stuff. What you got going on? You doing anything tomorrow?
Looks like a zoo day.
Oh, a zoo day. Wow.
Yeah. Big plans here.
Good for you, man. That sounds cool.
The kid loves it.
Hey, that's your only goal right now, right? It's like, yeah. Does your kid love all this stuff he gets? Okay, that's why you're at work right now, to get money for the kid's stuff.
And not my stuff. Not my stuff at all. No.
Nope. Your stuff is irrelevant now. No. All right, everyone. We'll be back after game two on Tuesday night. So if you're listening to this on like Sunday or Monday or whatever, refresh your feeds or check Twitter after Tuesday night, and we'll be up. We'll have you for your Wednesday drive to work, at the very least. All right, everyone. Goodbye.